I tell you right out, sir, that I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to talk.
I'm Justin Sowler, film critic with the Mountain Express, and this man interrupting me is Ken Henke.
The other film critic with Mountain Express. And we are...
We're Elitist Bastards. Coming to you from the Cinema Lounge.
Is that where we are? I'm glad somebody explained it to me. Okay.
You're not that senile.
Well, I'm working on it.
Yes.
And where is the Cinema Lounge?
The Carolina Asheville on Hendersonville Road.
Ah, okay.
Deep then in the heart of South Asheville.
This is how I got here, okay.
Yes. You will.
And I'm assuming that we've both been to the movies.
Yeah. I was, at least.
I have a vague memory of it, yes.
Well, there are times where you just stay home and watch things.
Well, that's true, but so, nobody gave me a screener of any of these.
Bastards stay at home and watch movies.
This doesn't sound nearly as good, no. And nobody gave me a screener on any of these, and I really am glad I didn't see Inception. Even on a 52-inch television.
I'm not glad I haven't seen Inception, but we'll get to that later.
I kind of figured that, but... Well, I, on the other hand, have seen Inception.
Yes, and...
Inception is...
What's the verdict?
Probably as good as the hype.
Okay.
I didn't find any...
Which, the hype is... When that... The people that... I've had this weird, like... wave of reactions from people I've talked to that it seems like everybody that went to see the midnight opening Thursday night loved it, and now I'm starting to meet people that hated it. And
well, I can easily imagine people hating it.
Right.
It's
but it was living up to the hype from a fan standpoint for a while. And now it's
at the same time though, I have heard more out of Don Mancini, and in case everybody doesn't know who Don Mancini is, he's the creator of Chucky and the writer-director of Seed of Chucky. I've heard more out of Don Mancini, who is not a Nolan fanboy by any stretch of the imagination, in the past 3 days since he's seen that film than I have heard out of Don Mancini in a year.
Okay.
He's worked up.
In a good way or bad
In
way?
A good way. He has become almost obsessed with this movie.
Okay.
And I understand that because I think the movie's fascinating. I was never bored for two and a half hours.
Nobody I've talked to said, oh, it's okay. It's either
they either
love it or they hate it.
I like that. So. I like that in a film. I think that's a good sign. So, you know, for me, it's highest marks. It does have... The week had the distinction of me making an unprecedented... alteration in the newspaper, because normally we have a top pick. I could not, for different reasons, decide whether Inception or I Am Love, you can't really compare the two, which one was better. So this week, for the first time ever, we have two top picks. Granted, only I Am Love got a picture, but that's because there's only so much space and editorial doesn't always love me now because of the amount of space we use up. But there's
some of us are more loquacious than others.
I don't know who you're talking about.
You. It's who?
Piffle. I think we're being galagged. Galagged. There's no way of really explaining Inception in terms of plot. I can give you the setup. And the setup is that Leonardo DiCaprio's character is a man who makes a living, and apparently a very good living, out of invading people's dreams and extracting information from them. This changes when he is made an offer that he essentially can't refuse because it will get him back into the United States, which he can't get into for various reasons concerning the fact that he supposedly murdered his wife. And the offer is kind of, it's predicated on the idea that he gets into somebody's dream and plants an idea as opposed to extract something. And most people say this can't be done, but he says it can, and it actually turns out that he has reasons for knowing that it can. But this results in a movie that works on, at one point, I think there are four levels of dream reality going on at one time. That sounds a lot more complicated than I found it to be. I never found it hard to follow or to realize what level of reality or dream we were in. So, and that is sort of a major accomplishment type of thing.
Can you?
I saw
one of
Cyrus.
You said there's two top picks.
Cyrus
is not one
of
them.
The other one. Okay. No.
And it's not a film about Billy Ray Cyrus. Which, after reading your review,
the scary thing
you would
is,
prefer
I might have preferred that.
Okay.
Words cannot convey how much I despised this movie.
But you're going to try anyway.
It is. Yeah. I will. Yes. It is everything I dislike in indie film writ large. It looks cheap. It's photographed in such a way that it appears that the people who made it, and I know this isn't true, have never looked through a camera before in their lives. They've got zoom-itis, for one thing. They do long takes. They have the actors improvise dialogue, which is a real good case for screenwriting class. And it's deadly dull. It's an example of this thing called mumblecore, which is usually 20-somethings navel-gazing and bitching about how miserable their lives are for an hour and a half. Well, they've upped it and put a plot on it of sorts, but it's not any better. Now, I will also note that not everyone is going to agree with that. Not that that surprises me, because this thing does have an 80% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it is a case of Emperor's New Clothes. But, in other words, your mileage with this picture may vary. Mine is non-existent. The premise of Cyrus is that John C. Reilly is kind of a inert slob who gets convinced by his ex-wife, who he can't let go of after 7 years of divorce, to go to this party where he meets Marissa Tomei, who finds him taking a leak in the bushes and socially comments, nice penis, and which somehow or other ends up with the two of them in bed. A relationship ensues, and then he discovers that she has this 22-year-old son played by Jonah Hill, and they are unwholesomely close. Moreover, it turns out that even though Jonah Hill's character pretends to really like him and be friendly, he is, of course, trying to drive this interloper out of the relationship so that he has his mother back to himself. Well, there are probably ways you could take this dumb plot and make it funny, but it defeats the Duplass brothers.
Yes, I saw The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which...
He's almost convinced me to see Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I've almost convinced myself I kind of like it, but I immediately convinced myself that it's just okay.
Why do you kind of like it?
Well, there's a good bit of a strange Nicolas Cage in it, which I think... I'm pretty sure at some point I'm going to end up examining... I'm going to map out Nicolas Cage's career.
That's one that he's ever seemed to do.
Yeah. I feel like somebody's got to get to the bottom of this because I don't know what's going on with him. But there's a good bit of strange Nicolas Cage. There's also the
not so strange Nicolas Cage, but there's enough of him being odd that it makes it interesting. It's
if you map out Nicolas Cage's career.
Yes.
I want you to assign a name to every hairpiece.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
It'll be in the. It'll be an insert. And all right. A poster. It's a fun summer movie. It's just wizard types doing CGI heavy magic stuff to one another. And that's all it really is. There's a pretty lame romantic subplot.
It's involving Nicolas Cage and the young man?
No, no, no. Okay. No, neither. Jay Baruchel, which I... That's the secret password in Babe, I think, his last name. But it's him and some tart, and it's not very interesting. It's the whole movie's pretty generic in that it's one of these chosen...
You mean you've got this chosen one that somebody's been looking for uh-huh. 9 million years, and...
Yeah. And he's found, and then...
And, of course, the chosen one doesn't types. Have any clue that he's the chosen one.
And then the bad guys want after him, and then at the end he realizes his potential one.
How's Alfred Molina as the bad guy?
He's fine. He could...
I want more than fine out of Alfred Molina.
Well, I mean... He could play this sort of role in his sleep. He doesn't phone it in. He's having fun with it, but he's not like... There's no scenery chewing or anything like that.
Darn. So, acceptable but not exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it falls under the category if I was 10 years old, this movie would be awesome.
But at 10 years old, it doesn't achieve awesomeosity.
No. So, if any 10-year-olds listening...
I'm sure. I suspect there is a whole contingent of 10-year-olds that listen to this. So. I really do.
You're big with 10-year-olds.
So. That just sounds bad, and I really don't think that it's...
You're backpedaling a lot.
I don't think it's an appropriate statement.
You have a proper answer to that.
It so surprised me, I can't think what to say.
We have another Thursday Horror Picture Show.
On Thursday?
Yes.
Which would seem to be self-evident.
And it's someone's birthday.
It's James Whale's birthday, and he would be 121. However, uh-huh. we should also note that it is also not quite July 4th was leading lady Gloria Stewart's 100th birthday, and she's still alive.
Okay. Well, is she coming?
No, she's not coming.
Okay.
I asked, and... just isn't happening this week. But
she didn't hear you.
She found out we weren't having cake, and that was the end of
it. Well, we might have cake, and we could just find somebody to...
We haven't found anybody who's going to donate cake, so...
Or make one. Ken won't make one.
I'm not making cake for possibly 80 people.
Let's make it for 20, and then...
Everybody
make
else
it for
is
10.
Kind of SOL.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see.
Make cupcakes.
Yeah. Cupcakes are the coward's way out. I don't...
Well...
Anyway,
yes, The Invisible Man, which I realize that Bride of Frankenstein is the better picture, the more important picture.
Probably.
To me, Invisible Man is my favorite of Whale's horror films.
Well, you see, I realize that Bride of Frankenstein is probably his masterpiece, and The Old Dark House is my favorite of his films. So,
but what I enjoy so much about The Invisible Man is that The Invisible Man is such an asshole. The entire movie. That's his whole...
Well, he's crazy.
Right. And he doesn't... He's not so much evil as just a huge prick. And it's... amusing as hell.
You're just trying to get in a bid for showing Listomania with that statement.
Well, we're going to show that at some point.
We'll
do that later.
That,
anyway. But... Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's true. And I think everybody enjoys that. And I think everybody enjoys the fact that the bad guy in it, the bad guy who isn't the Invisible Man,
right,
is such a whiny little weasel that when he gets his comeuppance, you're really glad.
Right.
I mean, it's a movie to make you bloodthirsty. It really is. And you're glad to see villainy in action, because the villainy seems like so much fun. Although, if you look at it carefully, some of the villainy is pretty nasty.
Yeah. derails an entire train.
And then the thing where he bludgeons the policeman to death with a stool is pretty rough. Yeah. But overall, it's a fun picture.
Yes.
And it's one of those horror films that's good enough that it's just a classic movie without being a classic horror film. It doesn't need the descriptor to kind of distance you from it. I mean, it's one of the... I mean, The Invisible Man is one of the iconic universal monster characters, if you can call him a monster. It's close enough.
So. Yes.
People should join us.
They should bring their own cake, I think.
People should join us and bring a cake.
Everyone.
If everybody brought a cake, we would have more cake.
A cake potluck.
Than we would know what to do with.
Yes.
Only bring a cake if you know how to bake, however.
Or buy one.
If you're some sort of... buy one is also good. But if you're like some sort of amateur that's going to get a box cake and mix it up, no. Just keep that to yourself.
I'll eat it. I don't care.
Justin's none too picky.
And then next Tuesday, Asheville Film Society
has John M. Stahl's Imitation of Life, which is the 1934 version of the Fanny Hurst story, not to be confused with the, to me, egregious 1959 version, which has somehow become more famous because there's some sort of weird cult built up around director Douglas Sirk, who made it. But this is the original, and it takes it all very seriously. It's really high-class soap opera. It doesn't make fun of it. It doesn't condescend to the material. But it's also one of the earliest films, possibly the earliest film, to tackle the issue of racism head-on. Because it is about two women, one white, played by Claudette Colbert, and one black, played by Louise Beavers, who go into partnership based on the black woman's pancake recipe. And they both have daughters. And Louise Beaver's daughter is a very light-skinned black girl who is obsessed with the idea of passing for white. Once they get their pancake business off the ground, they have somebody suggest that they box it, and where they become millionaires many times over from having done this. It's kind of Aunt Jemima is what this part's like. And as the girls grow up, the black girl is so obsessed with being white that she disowns her mother and wants her, tells her that if she should see her in public, she has to pretend like she doesn't even know her. It's fairly strong stuff, even, you know, this many years later, and it has an emotional core that is pretty much undeniable, and I defy anybody to sit through the funeral section of that film and keep a complete dry eye. So,
what do they get if they do?
Well, if it's you, it doesn't count.
Okay. Other people.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I will look askance at them.
Okay.
And believe me, you don't want me looking askance at you. You've experienced it. So.
It's fine.
Yeah. Well.
Survive.
Only just.
What opens this week, Ken?
Well, I Am Love, of course, actually opens this week.
Yes.
But we've kind of covered that territory.
Uh-huh. Which I finally, I'll admit, I finally got around to watching the trailer for it today. That's a great trailer.
You know, oddly enough, I haven't seen the trailer.
You should watch it. It's a real, as far as trailers go. I haven't seen the movie, so I can't judge it. As far as trailers go, it's a really good trailer.
I will look at it. I will.
I have no idea if it has anything to do with the movie, but whoever made that trailer...
Just have great music?
Yes.
Okay.
It makes it seem very exciting.
So. In an odd sort of way, for a fairly slow movie, it is very exciting.
Well, you should watch the trailer. I recommend... My pick of the week is that trailer.
Okay.
So...
All right, that's trailer of the week.
Yes.
We'll start that now.
Okay.
Now, for a really dumb trailer of the week, I would nominate Salt.
Yeah. What's worse, I'm assuming you haven't seen the stuff they play before the films.
They have the so-called pre-show interview.
Yeah, they have a fake SALT news report, like, oh, Angelina Jolie's character has escaped from whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's really... All they have is, like, B-reel of Angelina Jolie running through traffic, and she can't... She runs very awkwardly. And without that, like, magic of making her look athletic.
You know, well, the trailer to me seems to be all about Angelina Jolie in slit skirts, Angelina Jolie in leather, Angelina Jolie firing big guns.
Yeah.
And running. Right. And doing improbable stunts. This seems to be the selling point, and maybe they're right. That may be the selling point, considering that what it's up against is a kiddie movie called Ramona and Beezus that Justin has at least heard of the books that this is based on,
right,
which puts him up on me, because even though they were obviously around in my childhood, I missed them.
Well,
and my daughter missed them. And now they've made them into a movie that's obviously aimed at children more than it is aimed at families. But I don't know if the books really have that much pull at this point in time.
I have no clue.
So
we'll see.
I don't know. The trailer looks grim. It has a sort of B-list cast of supporting people.
And... child star.
And some child star off the Disney Channel.
Selena Gomez.
I'm not even sure which one she is. I think she's Beezus.
No, I mean what she's from. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't watch the Disney Channel.
So
I know nothing about this film, and if God is good, that will continue.
No.
And you don't have some sort of really good leverage against me to make me sit through it.
Well, Cats and Dogs is next week.
No, that's yours.
I know. It's in 3D.
I understand it's in 3D. Cats and Dogs in 3D. Now, that's got to be a winner. I'm tempted to go see that with you just because.
No, you're not allowed.
Really?
Yes. Because then you can watch that with you. No.
I may come by myself while you're not looking.
No. Nope.
You won't know.
If you want to. You just can't watch it with me.
We're told it's time to do the sign-off.
Okay. If Steve says so.
Well,
we do what he says.
I think I heard the whip crack.
Yes. Well, I'm Justin Sowler.
And I'm Ken Hanke.
We're both Mountain Express film critics.
Last I looked, yes.
And the Express is kind enough to...
sponsor us doing this interesting experiment in media.
And we're here with the sopping wet... Steve Schoenfeld.
Yes, the sopping wet Steve Schoenfeld. He's sporting the wet look, which...
the John Cusack, as I call
it. I'm actually the only person in this room old enough to remember the wet look. Right. So...
Nevertheless.
No, nobody else.
So long.
So, that's it for us for this time. Mm-hmm. But we'll still be elitist bastards when we return, and we'll have practiced further elitist bastardry.